Running. It moves our body, but it also moves our mind. It ignites the human spirit and can even inspire our best ideas. Whether it's 0.2 miles or 26.2, it gives us the freedom to explore new perspectives. Because when you open your stride, incredible things happen in your brain. Your mind is free to dream. Learn more at on-running.com. Dream on.
From Torrance's cup-winning birdie at the Belfry to Molinari's heroics in Paris, the Ryder Cup never disappoints. Be there at the 2023 Ryder Cup as Europe take on the USA in Rome for the very first time. The ticket ballot is now open. The 2023 Ryder Cup at Marco Simone, Rome. You have to be there. Apply for tickets now at RyderCup.com.
Welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. I'm Christopher Harris, joined by Kartik Krishnaiyer. It has been a couple of weeks since we've had the last episode. And so, first of all, let's bring everyone up to speed on what's been happening. So for the listeners who may not know, both Kartik and I are in Florida. Personally, we weren't impacted by the hurricane, but I know Kartik was tweeting, and thankfully, Kartik, you did a great job, as always, tweeting the information about what was happening in terms of county-by-county evacuations. So much detail there. And then on my side, more so in terms of keeping the business running, but also making sure that our employees who are sprinkled throughout Florida, full-time employees, making sure that they were okay, and also taking care of my family and my parents, and making so anyone who's gone through a hurricane will know it's a pretty exhausting period, because you know it's coming. There's days of preparation, oftentimes afterwards too. There's days of whether it's no power or other issues. So that was the first thing. Then the second thing is that we got the report issued through the U.S. Soccer Federation in regards to all of the abuse that's been happening within the National Women's Soccer League in the United States. And as somebody, as a father, as a dad with three daughters, I didn't read the report. I went through and read sections of it, and I was just so disgusted by what I read. The sexual abuse, the verbal abuse, the physical abuse, everything that was reported there, and I couldn't go any further. And it honestly, it was depressing. I was sickened to my stomach reading this. I just had to take a break from talking about soccer. Kartik, what was your how did it impact you in terms of you probably read the whole thing, knowing you.
Yeah, same. I was disgusted with the sport, actually. And had it not been a Derek Klassiker weekend, I may have sat the weekend out. So I was just... I did watch the QPR Reading match on Friday. That's right. So that I did. But I was disgusted. The report dropped Monday, I think. And then I began reading it and stopped. And in fact, the point I stopped at, I decided to put on Twitter, hey, I've started reading this. I've stopped at this point. And people were like, oh, gosh, you know, maybe people were responding to me, Chris, maybe you should just stop there. It gets worse. And I'm thinking, it can't get any worse. I mean, this is dramatic stuff. And it got worse. And for you, Chris, not only as a father of three daughters, but daughters who played in this system. I mean, I can just imagine how it made you feel about the sport and about the U.S. Soccer Federation and NWSL, and quite frankly, I think I'm out of it. I'm out of U.S. Soccer is out of rope with me after this. I'm done with
that. Well, that was the thing that also upset me too, is that this has been going on for years. This is not like a recent thing. This is going back 7 years at least. And top officials knew about this. This is not something that it was, that nobody knew. The top levels of whether it's U.S. soccer or the NWSL, or people within the actual business of soccer knew about this. So for me personally, reading some of the information, not going too deep into it, just because I was disgusted by it, I was like, we wrote about it on worldsoccertalk.com. But for something like this, I think the New York Times and probably the Athletic too, I'm imagining, would have done a much deeper dive that would have gone into this in more detail. But to me, I was just really disgusted by the report, but also just feeling upset about the lack of accountability within U.S. soccer and the NWSL. My immediate reaction, Kartik, was let's just shut down the whole league. And I thought I had that feeling for about a day or two, but then afterwards I was like, okay, well, it's not going to fix anything. I mean, the issue's still there. Even if a new league was started up again, it doesn't necessarily fix the issues. Do you agree on that one or disagree?
Yeah, I want the league shut down. I'm still there. Although I do get that if you form a new women's professional league, you have the same cast of characters, effectively. I think sponsors need to put pressure and withdraw from NWSL. I do also think the U.S. women, in spite of their new CBA, and maybe because of their new CBA, they have the leverage. This is the time to sign contracts in Europe. This is the time to go sign for Lyon. Or for Wolfsburg, or for Chelsea, or Man City. Actually, we've seen some U.S. women at all those clubs at some point in the past. I assume the environment is safer in Europe. There have been some scandals in England that we know about, but nothing to this extent, and nothing systematic like this, systemic. And I also have to say, I think that there's a large number of U.S. women's national team players that maybe need to step up and be heard on this about what happened to players who were less famous than them, had less prestige than they did, were making less money than them. This has always been an issue within the women's game in this country that has been kind of a dirty little secret that people don't necessarily want to articulate. There's some that have, like Bo Dorr has been fantastic, right, in his reporting through the years on this. But there's been this dirty little secret that U.S. women's national team players don't necessarily show consideration or care about the lesser players, right, in NWSL or prior to that in WPS. There are exceptions. Megan Rapinoe has stepped forward. Alex Morgan has for years. Abby Wambach did before that. But I think they all have to step forward now and be heard. And if that means their league goes away, their league goes away, unfortunately. And then you reform something. The other option, Chris, I have to say, is to keep the league going, but to really make it a cause about women and promote women ownership and women manage people, women in management, and that might help to ease the transition. Nothing is going to wash this away, but maybe it becomes more palatable to keep NWSL going then. But I think the reality is that the thing has to be blown up.
Yeah, two parts of that. First of all, I think to me personally, the system is broken. You mean for this to go on for that long and for people to know about it for that long and so far no accountability other than they're going to bring forward some new programs to help things in the future. But this has been going on for a long time. And that's the thing, too, you mentioned, too, about the UK. I mean, it just as one example. So there were reports from basically sexual abuse that happened in the 1970s. And it was one coach that went from Crewe to Manchester City, and I think he was at Chelsea for a period. Those basically people came out to report that, and I believe he was prosecuted recently. But for these things to be happening for so long, it's just sickening. The other part of it, though, too, with if you do shut down the league, is... And unfortunately, it affects the girls. It hurts the girls and the women involved in the league. So then they may have to go overseas. And the reality is that there's not enough places, you know, probably for them to find teams to uproot and move to different countries. So ultimately, it hurts the actual progression of women's soccer in this country. And the other thing too, Kartik, I haven't heard much mention of this so far, is my concern is there may be class action lawsuits or other lawsuits against U.S. soccer and against the NWSL. And we know, especially, we all know in terms of U.S. soccer, the amount of litigation that's going on, the millions that they're spending already on legal fees with other cases going on. This could really cripple the organization.
Yeah, and I think we're also looking at a situation where U.S. soccer has consistently turned a blind eye to things that are difficult, right? They take the path of least resistance in managing the sport in this country, and there continues to be a lot of people grabbing, a lot of graft involved in it. So this is just more of the same from them, and quite honestly, I do not know how FIFA can continue to hold. Now, of course, FIFA has promoted Putin. They got this World Cup in Qatar, so I guess it's par for the course for them, right? But how they can continue to have the U.S. as a co-host for the next Men's World Cup. Now, you could argue the U.S. situation is worse because it is actually systemic issues within the game in this country. It's not Qatar, it's a political issue, right? Human rights violations, it's terrible. They never should have been awarded the World Cup. And I applaud Denmark and some of the other countries taking a stand, even though they're going. Obviously, maybe boycotting would have been more effective. But Denmark has qualified, but they're taking a stand about Qatar. And then obviously, they were in bed with Vladimir Putin, who's a butcher. We see what he's doing daily in Ukraine. You could argue the U.S. situation is more football-oriented, football-centric, and that they are not fit to host a World Cup, this federation, given everything we know about them. Now, this is the topping on the cake. So for those who haven't read the report, I think you hit on it really important to stress it again, Chris. It's not just sexual harassment, it's bullying, it's mistreatment, it's abuse. So it runs the gamut of effectively women in a subservient relationship to men or to some women who have enabled predatory men or abusive men. And it's nationwide. And it's in the youth ranks. It's in the college system. It's especially prevalent in NWSL and in academies associated with NWSL clubs. So it's not just because there's some people who haven't read the report who've come back and said, oh, well, you know, obviously this Me Too thing is happening. It's probably like CBS News or a couple cases of sexual harassment. It's terrible. Let's deal with that and prosecute those people or whatever and move on. But it's a lot deeper than that. If you read this preliminary report.
Yeah, so the first blow was the hurricane. The second blow was this report. And then the third blow was that we've been going through some changes at worldsoccertalk.com in terms of upgrading everything from, you mean, the comment sections to the podcast to how basically a lot of back end changes to the website in terms of how it's been run. And the schedules and the app, etc. So we went ahead and upgraded all of those. We're still in the final steps of basically improving everything there. So that has also taken a big blow in terms of time and energy. So those three things combined is the reason that we didn't have a podcast since, I don't know, I think it's like September 24th, I think it is. So it's been a couple of weeks. The other thing too, Kartik, and it's I want to be open and honest and transparent with the listeners too, is that a couple of months ago we said, okay, we're going to focus more on the Premier League. We're going to do kind of the EPL review show. And I know your life has been busy, and it's always busy. Mine is too. And in some ways, I think we made a mistake actually by doing that, because it limits the amount of soccer that we can kind of talk about and focus on. And The website, the podcast, everything that we do at worldsoccertalk.com is focused on the world's game. So it's like this, talking about the NWSL situation, talking about, we'll probably talk some Bundesliga in a little bit, so on and so forth. So we've decided to go back to what we've been doing on a weekly basis, which is focusing on the streaming, on the television production. We've got some news we've got coming up shortly in terms of some big announcements about the World Cup, etc. So we're going to kind of really kind of go back to our niche, which is focusing on talking about the things that a lot of people don't talk about, which is the television coverage, and it is the streaming coverage, and why things are the way that they are. And also, we've always been known as being very honest and outspoken, and very opinionated, both positively and negatively, but we're just speaking our minds. This is how we honestly feel. So you'll get our honest thoughts each week. And so anyway, so for this podcast and moving forward, we're going to be doing the weekly discussion of streaming and TV. Now, Kartik, what about TV and streaming from this weekend? Let's not go into all the games, but what stood out from you in terms of television or streaming of soccer?
Yeah, Der Klassiker ended up on ESPN Plus, which was very disappointing. I guess it's college football season, so I maybe should have expected it. Didn't know that ABC would show a game, a college football game, at the same time, and that ESPN, ESPN2. And ESPNU would all be showing college football games, which I guess is the world we live in, Chris, in the United States. I mean, I'm kind of out of the college football scene. Used to be a big fan, but not really into it anymore, and did not realize every ESPN channel, ESPN or ABC, every Disney channel would be taken up with college football. So that got bumped to ESPN Plus, which really disappointed me, really upset me.
Yeah, I think though, Kartik, with that one also, it's the same thing for El Clasico. I think as of right now, El Clasico is going to be on ESPN Plus and maybe ESPN Deportes, but as of right now, it's not going to be on ABC or ESPN. Now, that could change in the next few days. But part of it, though, too, I think, is the leagues. And the leagues, whether it's the Bundesliga or La Liga, in regards to the scheduling of these games, I mean, they have to, they know. If they wanted that game to be on ABC or ESPN, they would have to probably change the schedule and put it as an early game. However, you mean knowing the Germans in terms of the Bundesliga and how you mean they're not very commercialized, right? They're focused on the fans. The fans always come first. So it makes more sense to have it in that big 12:30 slot where it's the only game that's happening Eastern time in the Bundesliga. So same thing with La Liga, too. Oftentimes the scheduling of those games, if they wanted to, they could schedule it at a time where they'll know that ABC and ESPN or ESPN can show those games, too. So but then again, though, too, if you're, I mean, does that hurt the Bundesliga, Kartik? Does that help hurt their growth in the United States by having the game just on ESPN Plus?
Yeah, I think so. And this was the first Der Klassiker in 4 years that was really worth watching from a competitive standpoint, right? I mean, there have been obviously the first match last year, there was a lot of controversy in it, and Dortmund lost, and Haaland tweeted about the referee after. Remember all of that? But this was a great match. It was an entertaining match. It was a match where Dortmund, all the recent demons of Dortmund getting ripped in this rivalry, seemed to be coming true again through minute 60, and then the last 30 minutes. After Terzic made some changes, and again, they don't have Marco Reus, obviously, Dortmund, which is a huge blow to them, but they were able to fight back, and Modest gets that goal at the death. I mean, he had missed the sitter earlier, and it felt like that missed sitter was, it's typical Dortmund against Bayern, right? They get themselves in position to get something, and they didn't. And this was on ESPN Plus. It wasn't on ABC or ESPN. So I think you don't know beforehand. I mean, we've had this conversation before the last Der Klassiker, right, which was on ABC, Chris, and you said this is going to be terrible for the Bundesliga if it's a 5-0 match on ABC, and it turned out to be a 5-0 or whatever it was, 6-1, something like that, on ABC. So you never know with these things, but I think this was a blown opportunity, which is unfortunate. And then in terms of El Clasico, same thing, right? I mean, I guess it's the timing of the match.
Yeah.
And also maybe it's an incentive for signups for ESPN Plus.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I have a feeling that within the ranks or within the buildings of ESPN in Bristol, Connecticut, they're thinking about the Bundesliga, thinking it's probably pretty much maxed out, that there's not that much more capacity to grow the number of subscribers they're going to specifically want ESPN Plus because of the Bundesliga. Now, if Germany wins the World Cup next month, then there might be a bump in that. But they've maybe feel that they've reached kind of the cap. But again, too, if the game was on ABC, does that introduce that league and those teams to a greater audience? Yes. Is it going to make a difference on the ESPN Plus subscription numbers? Maybe. Probably a little bit, but we're not sure. El Clasico and La Liga, I think it's a little bit different, where they, I'm sure within ESPN, they imagine that in terms of La Liga, there's an opportunity to grow that audience in terms of tapping more into the U.S. Hispanic audience who might be fans of whatever team it may be, but here's an opportunity to go ahead and get them to be fans also of a Bundesliga team, a La Liga team, pardon me. Whether it's Real Madrid or Atleti or whoever it may be. But no, interesting things. The one game I did miss with everything going on recently, Kartik, was the US women against the English women live from Wembley. From a TV streaming broadcast point of view, did anything stand out from that one?
Yeah, so Ali Wagner... pregame. And I should admit, I was watching. I mean, my Twitter feed doesn't lie, right? I was watching QPR and Reading, not the U.S. women, but saw the clip after. And I was not in the mood to watch the U.S. women, given everything that's happened this week that we've already talked about, the report dropping. But in response to the discussion of that, I and again, I've seen the clip. Maybe it's out of context because I did not watch the entire studio show. And I did see a clip from Alexi Lawless. I liked what he had to say. I mean, I think Lawless, in these moments, he steps up sometimes, right? He can be perfectly objective. But Ali Wagner, on the other hand, said that this is a time for sponsors to double down and show they're supporting the women by doubling down on their support of NWSL, which I think is the exact opposite of what sponsors should be doing. And we've already seen since that Alaska Airlines, who is the primary sponsor, the presenting sponsor of the Timbers and the Thorns, who are in the middle of this controversy in Portland, pull away a little bit and say, okay, we're withholding. I don't know exactly what they're doing. I don't want to mischaracterize this, but they're pulling away for a quarter, it looks like, right? They're not going to give the full allotment of money to the Portland organization for the fourth quarter of 2022. And I think that's what sponsors have to do. The sponsors have to put the pressure on. The sponsors don't say, hey, that a boy or that a girl, great job. We're doubling down. We're going to double our commitment now to NWSL. No, it has to be the opposite. So that was a very bizarre comment.
Yeah.
And again, I didn't see the show. I saw it out of context, but it was. I saw the reaction on Twitter was similar to mine. And as I said, Lawless, I'm forgetting offhand what he said, but I said, okay, yeah, Alexi gets it. This is a pretty serious moment.
Yeah, Ali's comment seems very out of touch. I mean, we've had similar instances happening before with sponsorships. So whether it was the FIFA corruption scandal and fans actually protesting against the sponsors and putting pressure on them, and a bunch of them stepped away from sponsoring FIFA events. We had Stephen Cohen, radio DJ in the United States, talking about all these lies about Liverpool and how they were responsible for the Hillsborough disaster. And there were fans that took issue with that in large numbers. and protested against the sponsors and eventually got him fired from, I think it was at Fox or ESPN, wherever it was. And here we have a situation where I'm sure Ali Wagner's probably thinking, okay, oh my gosh, if we lose all the sponsors for NWSL, that league could be out of business, right? That league could be basically having a difficult time paying employees. But that's not the message that should be sending. It should be one of those things that if she can put pressure on anything, put pressure on U.S. soccer, put pressure on her employer, Fox, to say, hey, Fox, take a stand against this, get involved, discuss this issue, have an open forum on television talking about everything that's been happening and what can we do to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Not tell your sponsors, okay, double down and start, paying more money to basically have your brand associated with all these scandals. So yeah, not good. Out of touch completely there. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news on some brighter news. And it's not breaking news by any means, but let's talk about Fox Sports' announcers that they've announced the final list for the 2022 World Cup that starts November 20th.
Yeah, and so it's a good segue because we were just talking about Ali Wagner. She'll be paired with Derek Ray, which was a pairing we've had before, Derek Ray and Ali Wagner. John Strong, Stu Holden, obviously remain the top team for Fox and presumably call the World Cup final. JP Della Camera and Kobe Jones, that's an interesting team. They've called matches before. They've done some work together before, even I think a few NASL games they did together for One World Sports, the dearly departed One World Sports. That got bought by 11 Sports, which we will talk about in a little bit, teasing another news item here. Ian Dark and Landon Donovan, which should be a really good team. I'm pretty excited about that team. Jackie Oatley, who is, I think, a really good presenter and also has emerged as a good commentator doing Premier League matches. She'll be paired with Warren Barton. Now, the studio analysts are very interesting. It's a mix of kind of former Fox tournaments, U.S. national team players, etc. Alexi Lawless, Carly Lloyd, Chad Johnson, who, by the way, I have worked with in soccer, in the league that Iran, the Adult Amateur League Iran, he was involved with down in South Florida. So I know he's an NFL player, but he's a soccer guy also, big soccer fan. Clint Dempsey, Ini Oloku, who obviously was very good during the 2019 Women's World Cup. Kelly Smith and Mo Adu. So that's Kelly Smith's a return veteran now. She's done a couple tournaments with Fox. Studio hosts are going to be Rob Stone, Kate Abdo. No surprise there. Maybe surprising that we don't have a third studio host rotating in. Perhaps we'll find out about that as we get closer to the tournament. The reporters, Jenny Taft, Rodolfo Landeros, and Jeff Shreves, who I think is familiar to everybody who watches the Premier League, right, and has been for years. And interestingly, Sky is no longer aligned with Fox, right? They're aligned with NBC now in this country, but Jeff Shreves coming over to Fox for the World Cup. Tom Rinaldi, formerly of ESPN, is going to be the feature correspondent. And then your rules analysts are going to be Dr. Joe Matchnick and Mark Klattenberg. We heard Klattenberg during the Germany-England game specifically, right, in Nations League a couple of weeks ago on Fox. I'm kind of disappointed that we don't have Christina Uncle there, right? I think she would add something also, but those are two very solid picks as well. And obviously she's doing work for other networks now. So I think on paper, a pretty good team for Fox, as expected, some of the names on there, maybe I think a little weak in terms of not having a third studio host that might be able to rotate in. You know, you see the reps it takes, and you see when ESPN hosts tournaments, they will bring Seb Salazar and Kay Murray and rotate them in through the tournament. We saw it with Euro 2020. And so that's something I'm a little bit concerned about. And then I think otherwise, it's basically what we would expect. The question is, for me,
You are creative. You are dynamic. You want a job that uses your unique experience. You are a teacher. You just don't know it yet. Become a teacher and step into a job where no 2 days are the same, where you can make a real-life impact and where every lesson shapes a life. To get free one-to-one support with our teacher training advisors and get one step closer to the classroom, search Get Into Teaching today.
From Torrance's cup-winning birdie at the Belfry to Molinari's heroics in Paris, the Ryder Cup never disappoints. Be there at the 2023 Ryder Cup as Europe take on the USA in Rome for the very first time. The ticket ballot is now open. The 2023 Ryder Cup at Marco Simone, Rome. You have to be there. Apply for tickets now at RyderCup.com.
You've got Jackie Oatley and Ian Dark, two high-level UK-based commentators. What matches do you use them on? Do you use them on England matches? Because it appears, you know, based on where they are in the pecking order, maybe you don't. Ian Dark called the Euro final last year for Fox, for ESPN, excuse me, Euro 2020 final. So are you going to call, are you going to use him in the Australia-Denmark game, or are you going to, which is fine, right? But are you also going to use him maybe in some England games and some other big games, Germany, Spain, those sorts of matches? That's a big question. But I think the teams are pretty solid, quite honestly. It's a good lineup. And I have to say, Chris, parting thought, Warren Barton has grown on me toward the end of the time Fox had the Bundesliga. I think his analysis from when they had the Premier League, he wasn't very good. He got better gradually, and by the time they lost the Bundesliga rights, I thought he was pretty solid in that Bundesliga studio. So I think he might do a very good job with Jackie Oatley.
Yeah, I think overall, my impressions of the actual talent list here is that it's very predictable. There's not a lot of surprises here. These are people that they've been doing Fox games for quite some time. We knew about Ian Dark and Jackie Oatley being signed by Fox a while ago, probably a few months ago. And even the co-commentators are people we're very familiar with. So not a lot of surprises, not a lot of excitement. I mean, it doesn't fill me with like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to listen to the commentary of, say, if it was a John Champion or a Peter Drury, someone like that, or a high-level commentator. Ian Dark is good, definitely, and as are many of the others too. I mean, Derek, JP, etc. But they're voices that we're very familiar with, and it's not going to make me rush to watch that game just because of the commentators, which is okay because it's the games are the games, and the games are the biggest games in the world, and that's what people will be attracted to. One thing that I think is very noticeable about this list is that Fox has decided wisely not to try to get Mexican-American announcers, which is what they did in the 2018 World Cup, where they tried to go ahead and take Mexican-Americans doing games in English. And it was very broken in terms of the English was very broken and very awkward. And I guess with United States now, I mean, maybe with the last World Cup, with the U.S. not in the World Cup, maybe Fox felt that they had to try to go for the Mexican-American market, just because they didn't have the U.S. However, this one, they're not doing that. So that's really good news. And then, your point, Kartik, I think it's going to be John Strong and Stu Holden for all the big games. They'll do the opening game, they'll do the final, they'll do all the games with the U.S., and then I think after that, then it's going to be, it depends which game it is. So if it's Wales against Iran, maybe it's Jackie Oatley and Warren Barton, or Ian Dark and Landon Donovan. So I think a lot of it too is going to be based on that. So maybe if it's Germany against Japan, it's very likely to be like Derek Ray and Ali Wagner. So I think in many ways they're going to look and try to figure out who's the best person for those games in terms of their knowledge and of those games, of those teams and players. But yeah, overall, just the Chad Johnson thing to Ocho Cinco. It's important to note too that he's going to be involved in the nightly show, the World Cup Tonight show that they're having. So he's not going to be, I don't think, doing a lot of analysis in the studio for the early games, like the 5 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock in the morning. He's going to be working mostly on the nightly show. Anything else, Kartik, that stood out that is worth mentioning that maybe we forgot to mention there?
Yeah, Tom Rinaldi, I'm not watching American sports regularly. I did not know he had moved to Fox, or maybe he's only moving to Fox for the World Cup. I don't know. That was that name surprised me. I associate him with ESPN and doing big events at ESPN, whether it's the World Cups in the past, or big college football things, big Major League Baseball, big tennis tournaments. So that surprised me. That's a good get for Fox.
Yeah, I miss Rachel Bonetta. I mean, she's still at Fox Sports, as far as I know, and I think she's still doing maybe the betting side, but that's somebody that would have breathed a lot of new life into this World Cup entertainment show, maybe the nightly show, but doesn't look like that's meant to be on that one. Moving on, Kartik, MLS regular season just ended. We're now getting ready to go into the playoff period, and basically the round one and all the way up to the final. So for the vast majority of the broadcasters in the United States, the local broadcasters, many of them have called their final games last games for Major League Soccer and for their local regional sports network. And it's radio silence for Major League Soccer. There's been no news, nothing to report. They haven't said anything on the record in terms of what's going to happen for next season. I still think they're trying to figure it all out. They're trying to rush and get everything ready for the season that starts in late February. We'll see how many of the local regional sports network announcers and co-commentators will find their way to work at Major League Soccer for the Apple broadcasts. But right now it's a shame in many ways too, because there hasn't been an opportunity to give them a big send off to thank them for all the work they've done since 1996, other than some stories that we've published at worldsoccertalk.com and other sites. I'm sure The Athletic has something on it too, but it's just a shame that they haven't been given that big send off. Maybe Major League Soccer will do something by the end of the season, perhaps on television, because they do deserve it.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Great story from Daniel Forrestein at worldsoccertalk.com on that. It's an end of an era, and some of those announcers, commentators, are the reasons why people got hooked on soccer in the first place in this country. So it's a sad day. I mean, I assume a lot of them will be doing Apple broadcasts, but I'm not sure, because that would involve probably calling it from a central studio or some other sort of arrangement. So we'll see what Apple has in mind.
Yeah, from what I'm hearing too from my sources is that they're building a studio in the New York area, but it's not ready yet. And let's say they may actually end up using the studio in South Florida, at least temporarily, until they finish the New York studio, or the New York region studio. So yeah, there's a lot of moving parts with this, so it will be interesting to see. And of course, we will definitely report on it at worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, in terms of some other news items, two more to go to, and that's no surprise here, but over 66% of viewers plan to watch the World Cup on linear TV. However, the majority of millennials will stream the World Cup. And I think in many ways, too, this is going to be an interesting World Cup, right? Because streaming is going to be bigger than ever. However, you're going to get your traditional, maybe older families that will just want to sit in front of the television, turn on Xfinity, and watch, I mean, USA against England or whichever game it is, and watch it through more traditional, sometimes more reliable means than streaming. Not always, but sometimes. But yeah, no surprise there for me on that one, Kartik.
Yeah, no surprise for me either. And that's, I think, probably mirrors viewing trends throughout television in general, or throughout media in general, I should say. I have to get out of the habit of calling it television. Streaming is not television, but I still do that.
That's true. And then one more news item, and you mentioned this one before earlier about 11 Sport.
Yeah, so 11 Sport, we've known for a while that DAZN was in the process of purchasing them. They have completed their swoop for 11 Sport, and this gives DAZN a window into other soccer leagues and other sport on the streaming side. DAZN is a streaming platform itself, obviously a pay streaming platform that they didn't have, so they have a larger inventory of things now. And should note that FIFA TV is powered by 11 Sports. So we don't know how this arrangement is going to look in the end, but it may be a lot like what we're seeing with DAZN streaming the Women's Champions League, UEFA Champions League, UEFA Women's Champions League, where DAZN is the rights holder. They're streaming it on YouTube. It's not behind their DAZN. It's not on their DAZN pay platform. However, you're bombarded with incentives to sign up for DAZN's pay platform when you watch the Women's Champions League. So I'm assuming that might be the same thing we get with 11 Sports.
All right, let's move on to the listener mailbag. First up is Daniel, and Daniel is talking about Major League Soccer here. Daniel says, I think it's very selfish of Major League Soccer to get rid of the regional broadcast networks. I think that MLS needs to think about who they are hurting here. Yes, it'll probably be a win for MLS and Apple, and even that's being hopeful, but it's going to take a lot of jobs away from people in the industry. What are your thoughts? I also know that they don't have regional sports networks in Europe for football, and here we do things differently. Not a huge fan of MLS, but I like listening to Steve Cangelosi and Shep Messing during Red Bull games. Now, Kartik, for me personally, I mean, I remember the Sunshine Network. I remember Fox Sports Regional. And I remember in the 90s, were a big deal for your local sports regional network. And depending where you are in the country and depending how much of a fan you are of your local teams, you may be kind of a hardcore regional sports network viewer, or you may not be. Like for me personally, I can't remember the last time I watched any broadcast from a regional sports network. I'm watching, you mean, everything through streaming. Now, streaming on ESPN Plus may actually show the broadcast from the regional sports network, but I'm not watching it through.
I'll tell you how irrelevant they've become. The one thing I really still follow outside of soccer, I follow golf too, but the one team sport is college basketball, Miami Hurricane college basketball in particular. And there have been times in the last year or 2 years where UM basketball games have not been on the ACC network or on ESPN. And I thought, oh, geez, why aren't they showing this game? And it's turned out I've missed the game on the regional sports network because those things still exist. And there's an occasional game that's not on an ESPN linear channel, because the ACC network obviously is ESPN also, and it falls to a regional sports network. It's, you know, maybe two or three matches games a season. That's it. So, and that's it. Like, I had kind of forgotten that they even exist other than that. Yeah, I do remember the days. I mean, good shout out on Cangelosi and Shep. That's one of the better teams, and I actually would like to hear more Steve Cangelosi calling Champions League, Serie A, leagues that he knows pretty well. He's actually, you know, I think one of the better American commentators of this sport, but he's never really gotten. He did some Serie A matches somewhere, right? Once upon a time,
maybe he's done World Cups before for I think ESPN.
Yeah, that he has. Yeah. That's true, right? And I think he's done Serie A for whoever, maybe when ESPN Plus had it, mm-hmm. right? But now it's CBS. He's not calling matches, but he's a guy I'd like to hear more of. And I think there's a real expertise among the guys who were calling matches for regional sports networks in the 90s, the Dave Johnsons, the Dwight Burgesses, who is not calling Columbus games anymore, but did for a long time, Cangelosi, Joe Tolleson, that I don't think the guys who necessarily call soccer now that are newer announcers have. So I have a real fondness for those guys. Maybe, again, it's our age, Chris, and the attachment to in the 90s watching these guys. And I mean, at the time, that's how I watched MLS. I consumed MLS through the MLS Direct Kick or whatever it was called package in 98, 99, 2000, that time period, and was hooked on those broadcasts. I mean, and actually the Cangelosi messing one would be the team that stood out for me. If you want to elevate one team, that would be it would be those two guys.
Yeah, for me, this the whole local regional sports networks, to me, it's good riddance. And I don't mean that because of the actual commentators. I mean that because of blackouts. And the whole blackout situation in this day and age is ridiculous. I mean, you can live within 60 miles of a MLS team and have the game blacked out. But however, in that region where you live 60 miles away from that team, you may not have access to the local regional sports network that's actually showing the game. And that happens nationwide in different cities where you're blacked out from watching the game, and you can't even get the channel to watch the game legally if you want to. So it just adds so many curveballs. It makes the whole viewing experience very difficult. And with Major League Soccer moving to Apple, it makes a lot of sense, because if you're a cord cutter, fantastic. You can watch every single game, never have any blackouts, never have any issues, just subscribe and watch. And if you want to watch some of the games on television, we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. That we don't, as of right this moment, as of recording this podcast, the 2023 season for Major League Soccer is not going to be on television. Now, I'm sure some of those games will be on television, but those deals have not been signed yet. So there's a lot of question marks still happening, which is ridiculous at this point in time where we're so close to the end of 2022. However, the streaming does give a lot of benefits and is where everything's heading anyway. All right, let's move on to... this is a question from David. David says, question for the pod. Do you know of any development of a way to make changing streaming streams, like changing channels on linear TV? So do you know a way of changing streams, like changing channels on linear TV? I love watching soccer via streaming, but switching from a game on ESPN Plus to Peacock, for example, takes several steps. Leave one stream, select the other service, wait for it to load, find the second game, wait for it to load. It would be great if there was just one step like it does when switching from ESPN to FS1. Thanks and great job on the pod.
So I've had this problem too, David. Even had the problem this weekend. I'll concede that we didn't talk about the Premier League. I was in ESPN Plus for the, or Hulu, whichever one, for the Bundesliga, and obviously there was a game on USA, but the Premier League matches that had some interest to me were on Peacock, so I didn't do it because it would have been it was cumbersome. And then it's like, okay, then maybe I go back into ESPN Plus to go back to the Bundesliga stream, and the stream isn't as good, or the picture quality, and then I lose the picture-in-picture, all of that. So I don't know of a way, Chris. Maybe you know a way.
Yeah, I've got two solutions. One is Apple TV does have a picture-in-picture. So it's not going to be changing channels like on a TV remote control, but you can do picture in picture. So you can have, say, Paramount Plus showing, I don't know, Inter against Roma, and then you can also have the picture in picture showing whether it's Peacock or whichever other streaming service you're using. One of these days, we'll go ahead and probably put together a video of how that works step by step and how you can do that. That's the first thing. The second thing would be, and it's not exactly what David's looking for, but on Fubo TV, you can go ahead and favorite your channels that you watch the most often. So you can favorite, for example, USA Network, and you can favorite maybe the Fubo Sports Network for the games it shows exclusively. Maybe it's the UEFA Nations League. So it's the Fubo Sports Network, and you have USA Network, And then maybe you have one other channel, I don't know, CNBC or NBC favorited. So with FUBO, with the remote control, if you go press the button for down, I think twice, you can then actually go from your favorite channel to your favorite channel without having to hunt and peck through the actual FUBO TV interface. So it's not exactly what David is looking for, but if you do subscribe to FUBO and you do want to go within FUBO to watch those channels, it's a lot easier than trying to go, you mean, hitting like 10 buttons to try to get the channel that you're looking for to change it. Good questions there from David there. RJ talks about the World Cup. RJ says, as always, I enjoy the shows and content. Did you guys cover the Ian Dark to Fox News Bite on a podcast back in early August? I don't recall hearing it. If not, what are your thoughts? I would take Ian Dark any day of the week to call the U.S. men's national team games over Fox's other talent. Am I in the minority? So maybe we covered it, maybe we didn't cover it. We definitely covered it on the website, on worldsoccertalk.com. We may have missed out on the news on the podcast, though, depending on timing of that. However, yeah, John Strong and Stu Holden, Kartik, I think in many ways it's just as the list of Fox's announcers was very predictable, their broadcasts are very predictable. I never walk away from a John Strong and Stu Holden broadcast thinking like, oh my gosh, I just learned something interesting. It's almost like background sound, background noise. It's there. I can hear them, but they're not saying anything of interest. They're just kind of adding a sound to the game. Ian Dark will say things sometimes. It'll make me stop to think. I'll be like, oh wow, okay, I didn't realize that, or some interesting things. I prefer Ian Dark than John Strong, absolutely. But Fox is all in on John Strong and Stu Holden. Both of them are good. It's just I think Ian Dark's miles better.
Yeah, and I would say the same thing about Derek Ray. Derek Ray, you generally learn something when you listen to him. And I know we beat up on Allie Wagner for her tone-deaf comment earlier in the show, but I actually tend to learn something often when she's the co-commentator. So yeah, that would be a good team, Ray and Wagner. Strong and Holden, not really. I mean, I think their broadcasts are very stat-driven. I do think Holden is a pretty good analyst, right? He tells you he has a good way of explaining kind of what he sees tactically going on, right?
Yeah.
And maybe being kind of simple with it, because Strong talks more than most commentators. But yeah, do you learn anything new from them? Not really, no. And you do from the Derek Rays and the Allie Wagners and the Ian Darks. And I think Landon Donovan, I mean, when he did commentary, what was it, 2016 Copa America? Is that right? I thought he was pretty good. So he and Herc Gomez were the two stars that came out of that tournament. And obviously Herc Gomez has gone on to bigger and better things with ESPN. Donovan is maybe this is a breakout tournament for him.
Yeah, Stu Holden reminds me of early Taylor Twellman. And early Taylor Twellman was somebody that provided analysis but was very guarded in some of the things he said. And then he started to be more honest. He started to be more critical. Critical in a good way, right? I mean, it's that's what you want the co-commentator to be. Somebody that's going to call people out, or sometimes is going to point out different things that are going right or wrong, or mistakes or things that can be improved, but being completely honest with the actual viewer. And Stu Holden, for the most part, is very guarded, a recent game, and I think I tweeted this, the USA against Saudi Arabia game, he started finally to kind of open up and be critical about the US's performances in that game. And in so many other games in the past before too, where the US has not been that good or been underwhelming, he would hold judgment. I think in some ways he doesn't want to kind of lose that US audience. It doesn't want to be seen as being critical, perhaps.
Whereas Marisa Du, who's also part of Fox's team, but I guess he does co-commentary for CBS, but is always in the studio for Fox, does. He is critical of the U.S. So during matches. So that was why at one point, Chris, I was thinking maybe, you know, as much as I do like Stu Holden, maybe Marisa Du should be paired with John Strong. That was a start for maybe Holden keeping that mantle.
Yeah, that's a good point, Kartik, because it is one of those things with John Strong and Stu Holden is it has been predictable. It's become, like I said before, it's like wallpaper or just like just sound, background sound. They've been partnered so much together that it doesn't stand out anymore. So if you did have Amodu and John Strong, the dynamic would be different. I mean, it would be a little bit of kind of stepping over each other a little bit, but it'd be different. And both John Strong and Stu Holden are good. But together, it's a little bit predictable. It's a little bit boring, to be honest with you. And if that's your A-team at Fox, which it is, right, from the last World Cup to this World Cup, that is your A-team. They're calling all the big games. They're not going to say anything stupid. They're not going to upset any sponsors. They're not going to upset the U.S. fans. They're just going to commentate on the game. They're going to pack in a lot of stats. It'll be interesting, Kartik, actually, to see how much MLS they talk about. I mean, that is the comfort zone. That is what they watch and follow most. However, if Fox doesn't have a lot of MLS rights for 2023... does that affect how much they talk about MLS, how much they play up that angle? And especially with a lot of the American players on the squads playing in Europe and not so many of them playing within Major League Soccer, that will be an interesting thing to watch in terms of do they change at all or do they kind of stick with what they do? And what they do is okay. It's just like we said before from RJ, I mean, to me, Ian Dark's better because there's always something interesting he says. Sometimes it's not stats. Sometimes it's just something that happened. It seems more personal. And with John and Stu Holden together, it's almost like not robotic, but it's almost like it's like someone's hitting play on the tape and off they go. And you know exactly what's going to happen. And you come back a little bit later and it still sounds the same. anyway. Good feedback there. Kartik, last point here on the questions and listener mailbag is directed at you. It's from Dave. Dave says, Kartik usually makes good points, but the statement that the U.S. men's national team should see qualifying for the World Cup as an achievement is absurd. Granted that Berhalter is not a good coach and USSF have a lot of accumulated rot to clear. Nepotism, cronyism, favoritism, etc. And the team is inexperienced. U.S. men's national team is still a top 20 squad in a weak confederation that gets three automatic bids and a fourth that was very likely once CONCACAF drew OFC. U.S. men's national team are too talented to be celebrating a finish ahead of Panama. U.S. MNT may not well get out of the group, Group B. But as you note, it is a group with other teams that may also be a hit or miss. So Kartik, shots fired.
Yeah, I actually agree with the analysis that the USSF has a rot and Berhalter is not a particularly good coach. He's an ideologue. I don't know that he's not a good coach. I think he might be a very good coach at a club where he's able to use the transfer market to acquire players that play his style. But you can't do that at the national team level. So he's the wrong coach. He's the wrong fit. Because of that, I think it's an accomplishment. You have a very young team, an inexperienced squad. Belgium didn't qualify for the Euros or the World Cup in 2010 and 2012 as Hazard was coming of age, as Lukaku was coming of age, Fellaini and some of the other guys they had in Vertonghen, etc., Alderweireld, Vermaelen, that group company, right? That group didn't qualify because they were very young. We've seen it with the Dutch. The Dutch, in fact, didn't expect to qualify for the World Cup in 2006. They did with a young squad, but then used that kind of to build and said, hey, Marco van Basten was saying, okay, Euro 2008, World Cup 2010, that's what we're focused on. And obviously, they were the best team at Euro 2008, just had that stunning result against Russia, right? That loss in the quarterfinals. And then 2010 got to the final of the World Cup. So I think it is an accomplishment. But I do echo the sentiment that, one, the Federation is full of nepotism. There's a rot. They're worse than ever. We've made our comments about the Federation earlier in the show. That's how we feel about them. Berhalter, it's probably the wrong fit. And CONCACAF is very easy. So I should put my comments in some context. I think it's an accomplishment. However, finishing below Canada in qualifying is not good. And I think Canada, 1-11, may be better than the U.S., but they don't have the depth, right? They absolutely do not have the depth. And they went through a lot of qualifying without Alphonso Davies. They went a lot of the qualifying without, blanking out his name, the central midfielder. So they don't have the depth. They lost two of their key players, Estacio, that's who I'm thinking of, two of their key players, and they still finished ahead of the United States. So that's an issue, and this is not a vintage Mexico squad. So, yeah, maybe point well taken, actually, given how bad CONCACAF is. This isn't a vintage Costa Rica squad, right? I don't think Costa Rica expected to qualify this time. But they did, and Panama is completely rebuilt, completely different team than what qualified in 2018. So, yeah, maybe you're right, actually, now that we talk this through.
Yeah, and the other thing about this, too, is that Canada's got a much tougher group in the World Cup, in my opinion. They've got Belgium, Croatia, and then Morocco. I think the U.S. squad, or the U.S. group, is a little bit easier. However, at the end of the day, it's a cup competition. You never know what's going to happen. It all depends on the team that shows up and, you know, the team that you're facing. So Canada's got a tough time. So two more things real fast just about Fox's coverage, too, because we haven't mentioned it to date. We did mention on the website that Fox is going to have a float in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York City, and they're going to have a U.S. soccer float, which should be interesting, too, because, I mean, of course, maybe they'll have a Christian Pulisic inflatable above the float, but whatever it takes. I mean, in some ways, from a marketing perspective, in terms of mainstream America, that is a good way to go ahead and remind people, like, hey, tune in tomorrow for the day after Thanksgiving for the England-USA game. And then the thing about the England-USA game, too, and this is, again, we reported this at worldsoccertalk.com, is that Fox's executive producer that's in charge of the World Cup coverage is expecting that game between England and the United States to be in the top five most ranked or most watched soccer games ever in the United States, which is going to be some... If you can pull it off, some amazing accomplishment, because you have Women's World Cup finals in that. You have World Cup finals. They've gotten, anything from 16 to 27 million viewers. So to go ahead and be in that top five for a group stage game on Black Friday when people are busy and also there's a lot of other sports going on will be a huge accomplishment. However, the Fox's executive producer did say that he expects United States to beat Wales. It's a straightforward game, and that for England to win their first game. So as those two teams get to play that Black Friday game, both of them will go in there on a high.
Okay.
Which I took personal offense to, personally, as someone that is Welsh and also American. But I was thinking that the game between Wales and USA is going to be tough.
Between the American media writing off Wales and laughing at Wales, and the British media pretending like they don't exist and they're not a home nation, right? I mean, the BBC gives equal coverage, but not Sky doesn't. I think Wales might have a pretty big chip on their shoulder in this group. I wouldn't bet against them. That's my personal opinion. I think that they, Rob Page might be using that stuff. Michael Sheehan also to motivate them
for sure.
So I'm looking forward to it.
All right, listeners, it's good to be back, and thank you for staying with us. Thank you for listening. Definitely continue giving us that feedback. There's a bunch of different ways you can do it. You can do it through voicemail, which is 561-247-4625. You can also send us an email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com. On the website worldsoccertalk.com, there's a podcast thread, and you can leave your comments in the latest episode. And then there's Twitter, and Twitter is @worldsoccertalk. And then Facebook, of course, is facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. Kartik, where can everyone find you on Twitter if they want to follow everything from politics to soccer coverage to your general thoughts about many different topics?
KKFLA737.
All right, listeners, it's good to be back. Thank you so much for your patience. We will be back again next week with another episode. We're getting closer and closer to the World Cup, and closer also to Champions League returning to, of course, next week. Kartik, I know what you'll be doing, but what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.
Running. It moves our body, but it also moves our mind. It ignites the human spirit and can even inspire our best ideas. Whether it's 0.2 miles or 26.2, it gives us the freedom to explore new perspectives. Because when you open your stride, incredible things happen in your brain. Your mind is free to dream. Learn more at on-running.com. Dream on.
The Army Skynet 5 satellites can establish comms lines anywhere, but only a soldier can adapt their voice to the situation on the ground.
Giving orders and taking control.
Reassuring local civilians.
Staying calm in a medical emergency.
Or knowing when it's best just to listen. Nothing can do what a soldier can do. Army. Recruiting now. Search Army Jobs.